This is Conspiranormal.
All right, guys, welcome back to Conspiranormal. It's your host, Adam, and we're sitting here on our comfortable couch, and Sir Fiel is here.
The big, comfy Conspiranormal couch.
That's right. That's right. We're going to talk about something really, really interesting and kind of disturbing and a little bit scary today. And we've got William Ramsey with us, and we're going to talk about his book, Global Death Cult, talking about the Order of Nine Angles in the Atom Waffen. And William, I've had you on, it's been two or three times, I'm thinking. It's got to have been. The last time we talked about the smiley face killers, and I think it's been so long since I had you on before that that I can't even remember what we talked about.
I've done so many shows. Maybe it was probably probably West Memphis 3.
I don't think I've ever had you on about that one.
Okay.
I think we did briefly talk about it. Yeah.
Cold 9/11. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we did talk about the Aleister Crowley stuff. We talked about the 93 and all that.
Right, all
the Children of the Beast. I had you on about that too. We talked about all that as well. But we're going to talk about the Order of Nine Angles and the Atom Waffen. And I guess to start out, as I was telling you in the pre-show banter, this is something that I really did not know much about. I saw the news story last year about the Order of Nine Angles and how it was kind of infiltrated the military, and there was some concern about that. And after that, I really didn't hear anything about it. I might have heard some things here or there, and the Atom Waffen stuff I've not heard about at all. So a lot of this is kind of new territory to me. Sir Fiel knows a little bit about some of this, the James Mason and the Siege stuff, which we'll get to. But what made you want to write a book about these two groups?
Well, I think it just came out of my interest from the Smiley Face Killers. I was curious about what kind of ideologies were out there in secret. And when I kind of learned and read about the LNA, I was like, oh, wow. So these guys have a completely more vicious view of Satanism than these other groups that are out there. So that really led me to really start reading their core documents. And then as I was doing that, kind of reading their stuff, other events that were associated with the ONA popped up. There was a murder that took place in Toronto, Canada. The guy's name was William Von Nudegem, who on his YouTube channel has an ONA chant. So I watched kind of that event kind of unfold. He hasn't even gone to trial yet. He's still in jail. Mm-hmm. And so then I kept looking at these other kind of occurrences, and just through my research kind of led me to this kind of far right group in the U.S. called Atom Waffen Division. And some of the researchers and some other journalists have, seen that they have some far right occultism in there. So there's a connection between ONA and Atom Waffen, which is supposedly disbanded, but Atom Waffen only started in 2015. So some of the stuff is fairly new, and some of these occurrences and murders and crimes that are really kind of novel. And I think that's what led me to write this book, was try to explain this strange kind of underground series of groups, or really this groups, and how it kind of came out of the UK and crossed the Atlantic to the United States.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of this stuff are from these kind of countercultural projects of the extreme right and white supremacists in the 80s and 90s. And they kind of were incubating and now really found their place online for a new generation.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, it's very well said. I think that's exactly what happened, because I don't think the founders of the ONA, when they started writing it, whether it was David Myatt or him working with other people, knew that it would be disseminated so rapidly through the internet, which is really what has happened. So these documents are readily accessible. It's just a matter of whether people are reading them or not. But I think I show in my book a lot of these Atom Waffen. There was actually a fight within Atom Waffen about whether they were going to just kind of be your standard National Socialist or go the route of kind of a cold or esoteric Nazism.
Have you gone on any of these like bulletin boards and stuff to try to like kind of suss this stuff out and like figure out, like, I mean, I'm sure that that's kind of a dark place to go to. Have you spent a lot of time on this?
A lot of those boards have been shut down. So a lot of these guys kind of go online. One with the original one was called Iron March. It was really like a fascist one. Mm-hmm. And there was another one called Fascist Forge. But there has been other kind of researchers, a lot of the Antifa guys kind of keep their eyes on the far right. And so they've had some really good research into some of these characters. And then also another message board called Kiwi Farms has a lot of threads about Adam Waffen. So a lot of people are providing this information. And one of the chapters about Suvannavejh, who kind of was a Asian Nazi sympathizer who tried to or wanted to carry out kind of a Columbine style massacre. They had great information about her on Kiwi Farms. So there has been kind of a public research, you know, groups on certain places online for sure.
Okay.
And before we go into kind of like the history of the Order of Nine Angles, which is probably where we'll start, these groups are different than your, you know, traditional fascist organized more political groups, because they come from, on one hand, like Order of Nine Angles come from this this kind of occult background. And Adam Waffen comes from the ideology of like James Mason and the siege stuff, which was more of this like nihilistic Nazism about just causing total chaos, social and political breakdown. And then they, you know, of course, self-appoint themselves as they will be the new rulers, which is why they looked up to Charles Manson so much. So this isn't like your usual, you know, like organized Nazi groups. They're like very nihilistic. Yeah,
they're just a different iteration, like post-Hitler Nazis. It's a different view, and they have these different ideas. And James Mason and Siege was important, but they've integrated some other ideas from Mayat and ONA, some of these other occultists for sure. And I mean, I think that the guy who helped edit the fourth edition of James Mason's book Siege, he had ONA materials required reading once he became head of Adam Waffen. So that's kind of why I have that title in the book, because they do overlap.
Yeah. And I guess an overarching theme would be like occultism is a means to an end of self-transformation to become these, you know, like Ubermensch, I guess they think they are becoming.
Ubermensch, a new man. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So that they transcend morality. And this is a lot of the Order Nine Angles stuff is about transgressive things like harming, killing people, so that you then, you know, can become this warrior to carry out whatever their ideological goals are.
Yes, definitely. I think that was their real core. Their core documents really involve culling, but Mayat kind of had two interests. He kind of had overlapping National Socialist interest and occultism at the same time, according to his own biography. So he was developing, and he kind of went through a Crowley phase. So he's really a kind of a post-Crowley, and you could tell that he knew about the Church of Satan and the Temple of Set, and under the false pseudonym of Stephen Brown, was in communication with guys like Aquino. So, and I include that in my book, so you can kind of see how this ideology kind of morphed and advanced over kind of earlier Satanism. But you can definitely see almost kind of like the same concepts in Nazism are there in this group. So you see the new man, the Untermensch, they would call him a different name. So they would be Homo Galacticus and then Homo Rubriati or Mundanes. And it's us against them. And so you have this kind of almost similar kind of view that I think the Nazis did. So I think that you can see that National Socialistic influence in Mayat's writing in the ONA for sure.
And he seems to have really been like a wanderer. I mean, he went through so many phases, it seemed like. Mayat, he became like a fundamentalist Muslim, all kinds of different occult phases. And
Yeah, I was in a Catholic monastery for 18 months. So you can see that influence in the Analytic too.
Let's talk about David Maya, because, I mean, this starts with him. I mean, he's the founder of the Order of Nine Angles. So this guy, I mean, like Serfiel said, he goes through so many permutations of his life, gets involved with so many things. Kind of take us through, like, you know, how he comes up with the Order of Nine Angles, what its purpose for him is.
Well, I think that he came, you know, his father was a colonial Englishman, so he was involved in, I think his father was involved in working outside of England, so he was able to travel a lot. He went to college, so he was educated, but he was also a National Socialist. And I think really the guy's clearly very intelligent, and I would call him a magus. There's actually writings in some of the ONA stuff, they call him Witch King, but he definitely has kind of wrestled with history, but he came out after looking at philosophy and history and saying National Socialism is the way. And I think also that occultism at the same time, esoteric Nazism, was really written into the ONA from the beginning. So the earliest documents have this Hitler as avatar outlook, where they see time from the beginning when Hitler was born in 1889. They call it the year of Fayyan, which can be translated year of rejoicing or year of the king. And so you see all these kind of old English references in the stuff. But the ONA, I think at its core, was an attempt to infiltrate and bring in National Socialist ideas that were not really politically possible, popular. So I think it was another way for Myatt and the founders to really disseminate these ideas in secret and use it through this kind of cell structure, which they would call a Nexion. So they would kind of almost like a multi-level marketing scheme where they would have small groups and those groups would form other groups. And I think that was what his intent. And that's really why I called it the global death cult, because all those pernicious ideas have disseminated through the world through the internet. And you can see these Nexions, and I have a whole chapter in the book just about some of these places that are in different countries. So, but I think to answer your question, the core ideas were really his fusing of kind of National Socialism and Satanism.
And some of that came out of what he saw as like the failures of the elements of the extreme right that he was involved in the UK.
I think so. And I mean, I think he writes about like they didn't never really reached any popular movement, kind of like the Nazis did. They were always trying to, but they couldn't really get it through. And I think it's very important to see him as somebody mixing with a lot of these Nazi leaders on the far right, these other characters that maybe people in the UK know, Colin Jordan or Martin Webster. But so I think that for sure, you know, that's, I think that that's what his references were these kind of people in National, was it the National Action or something like that, National group that was in England.
Yeah, and even at like the end of someone like Willis Cardo's life, like he said that he felt like the trajectory of these extreme right groups are kind of like doomed to failure, and that the only thing that could bring about their goals would be extreme circumstances. So then it seems like he comes to the same conclusion as a lot of these people, especially in the 80s, where they're like, well, the traditional political organizations aren't going to work. We just need to basically try to destroy social order, and then out of the ruins of that, we can build something.
Right, like accelerationism. And I think that that's really was what some of this occultism that Maya put together really was infiltration. And so you kind of see a lot of his people, like you talk about all of those different things in his life. Well, he wrote into his ideology this idea of insight roles. So you could say these certain parts of Myatt's life were gaining insight in these roles. But if you were really an occultist before a National Socialist, you'd be learning these different things with the idea to spread chaos and dissension and accelerate the downfall of societies as an occultist in these far right movements. But I think Myatt really joined and became a far kind of a radical Muslim for that insight role, because their ideas were somewhat similar to his. Like even the National Socialists, it was all racialism and violence and murder. And I think that's really what Myatt was promoting through in his occult works.
Well, ask you about, you know, kind of the anti-Christian idea between it, behind all this as well. You know, like they refer to it as like, you know, the, I guess, Magian or also Nazarene, and those ideas, and a little bit of elaboration on like this whole idea of like culling of the mundanes and kind of like what that means. And
right, so culling is like a husbandry term. So culling is like when you kill off animals. So their idea, and when Myatt, as Stephen Brown, was writing to the Temple of Set, it was like, what distinguishes us from other satanic groups is our attitude towards culling. It's very important to us. So they have this idea that you're supposed to literally kill people. And it's written into their early doctrine. So they had this septenary way or sevenfold way. And the fifth way is you're supposed to conduct a human sacrifice or a culling. So the steps that you're supposed to advance in the ONA, at least as it's originally written, were, you know, depend upon culling, but you're also supposed to do it in secret. So people aren't supposed to kind of, only the insiders know that you're killing. But here's one thing that Myatt wrote. If there's one thing which expresses the essence of the satanic ethos, it is culling. And if there's one way to detect a pseudo-Satanist, it is their attitude toward culling. So they use this term called Opfer, which is a German term for sacrifice. And their view is they are kind of an SS unit of people, and the other people who aren't of them are the mundanes. And you know, he writes, those who are not our kindred brothers or sisters are mundanes. So they distinguish in the writings, distinguish themselves from kind of normal human beings and stuff like that.
Right, and that anti-Christian stance as well, saying that like Christianity, of course, comes from Judaism, and that's a way to kind of like, I guess, bring out your inner pagan and all these type of things. You know, and the occultism that I guess that he was interested in as well, I guess that he kind of pulled some of that from Crowley, but I think that there was a lot of it that was, his stuff just seems like such a mishmash of just about everything you could think of.
I agree. I think a lot of druidic ideas, pagan and druidic ideas.
Right.
Because they're always going out into the forest. There's very strong kind of like, you go out in like one of their paths of advancement is to go out and lie down in the forest from sundown to sunrise. So you like sit there for 12 hours and just kind of feel what's going on in the forest. And you'll see all these pictures or imagery that are associated with the LNA are all kind of like, you know, lonely forests and things like that. So I do think that he brought in ideas from a lot of different stuff. So the Magian state is the ideas of this guy by the name of Yaki, who was a fascist and, you know, an anti kind of Christian.
He wrote Imperium, right?
Imperium, right. Excellent. Yeah. So Imperium. So that was influential on the, in the far right groups. So yeah, so they had contempt for Nazarenes, and some people are like, well, what does this include? I think it includes Christians, Jews, anything really from the kind of Judeo-Christian tradition they have contempt for. I mean, you can see it in their rituals. If the people are doing these rituals, it's like, you know, we spit on Jesus and blah, blah, blah. It's pretty, pretty vicious.
And you've got other like heads of this as well, like that you talk about, Christos based, I guess, Chloe Ortega.
Ford, yeah.
What's some of their influence on this order?
Well, I think that they just kind of carried on with the standard ONA tradition. So this guy, Christos Beast, whose name, the real name is Richard Molt, did kind of their own tarot cards. So you'll see a lot of this, the symbols and imagery of the ONA are on these tarot cards. They're called the Sinister Tradition tarot cards. But he also kind of was in communication with other people. They called it the Outer Head, which is similar to what was going on at the OTO. They had an outer head of the order. And so they're in communication with other interested parties or possibly recruiting new people. And Ford was an interesting character because he also kind of was in his writing his own satanic literature and somehow became associated with the ONA. And I guess the ONA members said he wasn't dutiful towards order of nine angles ideas. And so he was gone. And so then there's this young kid who's like from California. There's two girls who were talking to Mulden. I guess she became the outer head. Her name is Chloe. And I guess she's the current outer head. And there's a lot, there's still posting and things like that. There's still activity with this group. And a lot of the stuff is on the surface. I have no idea really what's going on underneath the surface communication, but they just actually had a guy. It was interesting. He just got convicted, and I write about him in my book, but he just got convicted at the Old Bailey in the UK. And I'm trying to remember what it was. He was part of the Sawning Creek division. So they had these other kind of global fascist offshoots. One was Sawning Creek, the other is Fuhrer Creek. And he was called Dymock, and he actually just got sentenced, but they found that he was in communication with this other guy, Denton, who was the head of Adam Wolf. And so you see this, and he was also kind of an occultist. He's actually a member of the Temple of Blood, according to one journalist. Denton was a member of the Temple of Blood before he became the head of Adam Wolf. So.
Yeah, so all this stuff really kind of cross-pollinates with each other. Like, it's all, yeah. Everything that you talk about in this book, there's like just like a cross section between them. In the late 90s, 1997, I believe, that there was, and I forget, the guy's name escapes me, but there
David
was.
David Copeland?
Yes, that's it.
The nail bomber.
Yeah, he actually acted out what Myatt was actually advocating. And I guess Myatt actually tried to distance himself, or there was some kind of, not taking the responsibility, but he was heavily into this order.
Right. So they have. Right. So there's actually a really good documentary about the London bombing. He's kind of infamous in the UK because of how much damage he caused, David Copeland. But there's a really good documentary on Netflix about him. But he dropped three bombs and like people's arms and legs were blown off. And they found out after he was arrested that he was the National Socialist Movement's organizer for Hampshire and Surrey. So he was associated with this group that Myatt had started, the National Socialist Movement. So after they kind of get in trouble, they rebrand. It's almost like Adam Waffen. I forgot what their new name is now. Mm-hmm. But
right.
Copeland was definitely involved. He wanted to be famous. And so he had kind of some of Myatt's ideological writing. One was called A Practical Guide to Aryan Revolution. So, Copeland was... I think an important part of the kind of development of this story of National Socialism to Order of Nine Angles to Adam Waffen. And I think that you'll see that if you read Siege by James Mason, there's a real kind of deification, and I included in this my book, of these Nazi lone wolf killers.
Yeah.
And it's hard to believe, but that's the people. And actually what's really strange about Siege when you read it is that James Mason knew some of these people who are somewhat infamous that people would know. This one guy, Franklin, who shot Vernon Jordan, and the pornographer guy, whose name I can't remember offhand.
Larry Flint.
Larry Flint, thank you. Yeah. Was like friends with James Mason. And James Mason's hanging out with, I've seen pictures of him with this guy, Denton, and also Woodward, who stabbed this kind of poor Jewish kid, Blaze Bernstein, 20 times. There's pictures of Mason with Woodward.
Yeah.
So that's what's weird about the Siege. And you can kind of see these crazed killers, like even recently in the Tree of Life synagogue killing, like or Dylann Roof,
yeah,
going in and shooting people. So I think it's really important for people to see how dangerous these ideas are and these people are. Really, that's kind of one of the reasons why I wrote the book.
Before we move on, let's talk about James Mason and the Siege, because I mean, you know, Surfiel told me about this, and I mean, this is some crazy stuff. I mean,
so it's like, crazy,
his ideas and how this gets filtered in, and like, you know, what his continuing influence on some of this. And the fact
on Adam Waffen too. Tons of pictures of him with Adam Waffen members.
Yeah. And it doesn't he live like off of public assistance?
In Denver.
Like
in Denver, correct.
Yeah, right.
What you were saying before too, it's this idea of propaganda by deed, and that when these lone wolves do these things, then that will put the the name of these ideas and these groups out into the news cycle, and then more people will discover it.
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, I think that they're attracting a dangerous contingent of people, but I think most people would be revulsed by their ideas. But I do think that they're able to extend their influence through the internet and through other things, how people get drawn in. And one of the important things you can learn from Siege is that people who get killed are often people on the inside who are involved, It's not just like they're targeted groups, but oftentimes these national socialists get killed by other people. Rockwell got shot by an insider.
Right.
This other guy, Tomasi, got shot by a competitor. They all want to be Hitler. So it makes it really hard on the inside because, somebody else wants to be the Führer too. So,
yeah. Mason really comes up under Rockwell, American Nazi Party, like as a very young person. I guess they've pretty much take him in. I think he's like 15 or 16. He has problems with the law. And from there, can you kind of explain James Mason's trajectory and when Siege came about?
Yeah, so Siege is really a collection of writings from 1980 to 1986. They were compiled by him. It's a variety of different subjects. Some are pretty benign, some are pretty lethal. And his idea, so you can see this kind of accelerationist theme through there. And obviously he's a racist and anti-Christian. So he's all about the kind of similar Nazi ideas of the blood. And actually Christianity, according to him, was a triumph of the white racial blood, not of an ideology. But he ignores the fact that Christ is Jewish. That's another story. But yeah, so so you see that kind of within Siege, and it's been kind of re-edited four times. The last time in 2018 was done by this guy Denton, who just got sentenced to 42 months in jail. But that's, you'll see a lot of these guys talking about Siege culture, holding the book Siege. So that's like a required reading for a lot of these people. And Mason was, I think he joined the American Nazi Party at the age of 14. And he was the youngest card-carrying member of the group. And he went to go be in Arlington, Virginia, working under George Lincoln Rockwell, who's kind of like an infamous American Nazi who ended up getting shot. Strangely enough, I lived on the same block where George Rockwell got shot when I was in law school in Virginia. So I kind of was familiar with Rockwell's story, 25 years ago. Yeah. So I would walk right by where he ended up. I think they tore down the shopping mall that he had put in houses there, but still he was killed. Rockwell was killed by a guy named Padler, whose last name was Pat Salos, but he changed it to be closer to Adolf Hitler. So there's a lot of crazy characters within, just the Siege story itself. But so you have the emphasis on Aryanism and the same kind of frustrations. These guys, not too many people want to be Nazis. And so Mason and these other guys, he was like in the same kind of boat as mine in some ways, where nobody really wanted to get into the movement. So they're frustrated and trying to figure out other ways to facilitate their political ideas.
Yeah. And this, I think in particular, the kind of deification of Charles Manson was really due to Mason's influence. And I don't think that Charles Manson would have had his kind of countercultural, revamping in the 80s without Siege. And
really,
even though it was done in this kind of like, just nihilistic, tongue-in-cheek way to a lot of people, people like Michael Moynihan, Boyd Rice, and probably to a certain degree Adam Parfrey, were very responsible for getting Siege a lot larger audience and thus the deification kind of Charles Manson as that second avatar to Adolf Hitler.
Right. No, very well said. And I think that if you remember, Manson was always talking about the racial war, and there was all kinds of antagonists trying to blame everything on African-Americans, the crimes that he did. He was trying, these were his ideas. So you can see that similar kind of racism. And actually Mason was in contact with Manson. So they're communicating, sending letters to each other. And then Mason becomes an admirer and then starts something called the Universal Order with Manson. And that's now defunct, but that was, Manson kind of had that racism, but also this kind of esoteric atwa, air, trees, water, and something. He got kind of like a neo-paganism, earth worship kind of aspect to him too. So they kind of like that. But yeah, you'll see these kind of, these admirable writings. Like Mason writes this: Charles Manson was and is the master of this philosophy. You know, he's talking about violent revolution. So he's definitely an admirer.
Yeah, it's that helter skelter idea. Even if that was kind of a myth, I mean, they later really roll with it.
Yeah, and they actually, Adam Waffen has been known, they had these hate camps. They were in Nevada and went to and drove to this kind of famous tunnel that Charles Manson would take his followers. So they kind of did the same kind of pilgrimage to a Charles Manson site. So it's, yeah, this whole movement is really crazy. So they have influences of occultism, Charles Manson, all kinds of stuff.
Because, I mean, to be totally honest, like, you know, I grew up with under the influence of a lot of like Farrell House books. And I heard about Siege secondhand, and that Michael Moynihan, who wrote Lords of Chaos about the black metal stuff and is a part of a Blood Axis. You know, I'd heard that he helped Mason publish it and some other things like that. But I was under the impression that Siege was just some kind of like Charles Manson glorification and not an entirely like ideologically Nazi propaganda.
Yeah.
You know, of the worst kind. And then when I actually, you know, did encounter the text and realized really how hardcore Moynihan was into this stuff, but along with people like Boyd Rice, they would feign that, you know, oh no, we're just kind of nihilistic, or, you know, this is just a revolt against the corrupt modern world, etc. But no, this is hardcore Nazi stuff.
Or it's kind of got that artistic quality.
Yeah, or they hide behind the art. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no. And, I would say it's hardcore Nazi stuff. Those guys always kind of dodge questions when you talk to these guys. A lot of times that we're just S posting, blah, blah, blah. You know, we're not that serious. It's kind of a common theme when some of these guys are called on their ideas. It's their response.
Yeah. And it makes you wonder, you know, I've really delved deep into some of these like countercultural projects of some of these groups during the 80s, especially. And it makes you wonder like how much, you know, someone like James Mason was pretty, materialist and anti-religion, but, you know, I think they thought things like, Nordicism and Asatru could be useful. Maybe occultism and this like Nazi forms of Satanism could be useful. I just think they're extremely cynical and like willing to use anything to get these ideas out there.
Yeah, I think so. I think that like, if you look at the LNA, that maybe the real purpose is to rebrand Nazism into occultism and get those ideas out there under different names. Does that make sense? Because there's a lot of similarities between Nazism, but they don't use the terms like Untermenschen that would turn people off or something like that, but they have that same kind of racism and murderous intent. I mean, the Nazis were murderous. So, I think that I would think to get more popularity, they would have to rebrand. And I find it interesting that some of these people in the new ONA aren't even European or white or whatever. So,
it's very strange.
Yes, that is very interesting.
And so how does this Adam Waffen group really start? Because they're directly under the influence of Siege and the ideas in Siege, but it's like it's a new generation though. It's not that 80s like countercultural fascism. It's like kids that are kind of just disconnected from anything like that. They're just into these internet subcultures
from reality.
Yeah, and I think that that's really the common theme of a lot of these Adam Waffen, is that they're people on the spectrum. They're Spergs or whatever, Asperger's guys who, and Adam Waffen just started in 2015. It's not very old. It was started by a guy who is now in jail, and his name is Brandon Clint Russell, and started in Tampa. Clint Russell was supposedly from a wealthy family or well-to-do family, and was living close to the University of South Florida, and really organizing came out of Iron March. So you can see pictures of him online talking to people, but he really started his kind of fascist offshoot, Atomwaffen, which I think is nuclear bomb in German. Mm-hmm. And they had all kinds of bomb making material down there. What happened was on 2017, one of his cohorts, a guy by the name of Devin Arthur, shot two other members of the group who were Himmelman and Onishuk, who had come down to visit them a few times from, I think, Massachusetts or somewhere up in New England.
Right.
And, so they got killed, and that kind of brought this whole group to the attention of the authorities after they found this guy was, you know, had bomb making material, tons of guns, and he ended up getting arrested. He actually got stopped. When he got stopped, he was on the run in the Keys, Florida Keys. And when the cops pulled him over and went through his car, they thought they had stopped a mass shooting because he was armed to the teeth. And then he actually went to jail for all that bomb making material. He got a 5-year sentence, not a very long sentence. But Atomwaffen had probably 80 members at its height. And then they had another 80 people trying to get in. So they kind of had a kind of porch thing. So, but the leader really was him. He went to jail, and then the leadership kind of bounced through Denton, who's now in jail, and then to another guy, supposedly Moriash. But I would say Atomwaffen's core ideas were it's kind of interesting, but they were definitely influenced, in my opinion, by the ONA, because the two guys who started were trying to do these insight roles. So after he started the group, Russell joined the National Guard, and this other guy, Arthur, who shot the two other people and murdered him, became a extremist Muslim. And that's actually why he shot these two other people, is because they were teasing him for being a Muslim. But it seems like he was just following kind of this ONA doctrines of insight rules. But there was tons of stuff they were writing online that were very nasty and ferocious. There were all kinds of threatening stuff, but they were doing, I think that the name of the explosive was called HMTD. So that's what he went to jail for. But they had all the kind of standard far right ideology and things that they admired, like Timothy McVeigh and, obviously Nazism. But they actually had members all over the country. And there were all kinds of things that happened where these guys would get arrested. There were swatting events. There was people putting up flyers. They do this kind of posterizing. So you'll see kind of the ideology of the group is disseminated through posters put up all over the place. And I think that was kind of what people were doing to get initiated, was going and putting posters up at colleges and things like that. Really nasty kind of posters of violence and racism and stuff like that. So, but yeah, so Atomwaffen supposedly disbanded in 2020 and became some other group. But I think there's still a lot of people in there, and Russell has made some statements. He's exposed people who are in the group, and, you know, he's made some statement of from jail. He's in references Manson and Adolf Hitler. So kind of not very nice references, but what does he say? I've become a prisoner of war in this war against society. All of those who abandon ship, woe to you. Adolf Hitler once said, there's no room in this world for cowardly people. So there's certainly no room for you in the Atomwaffen division. The same goes for all the pathetic rumor spreaders, opportunistic parasites, and any other traitors. The sword has been drawn. There's no turning back. And then he ratted out the names of three fellow Atomwaffen members.
You know, we noticed something, and we're going to talk a little bit more about these people, but like, we noticed a common theme is the Asperger syndrome.
Yeah. I mean, they say Anders had Asperger's, some of these other guys, like this one guy, Jeremy Himmelman, had like electroshock therapy. Onishuk was definitely seemed to be on the spectrum. Like they're not, some of these guys just really aren't well. And it says something about their stability and why they're even interested in these kind of far right hardcore groups.
Does that make them more susceptible to joining these type of groups? Does something about the message make people in that mind frame more
susceptible? I think the message is just so antisocial, and it targets people, I think, who feel like social failures. And it makes, you know, it gives them an identity and gives them a mission, you know, and they self-appoint themselves to destroy society, I guess.
I mean, there's some deep psychology there. I mean, there really is. And I think it's very important for listeners to understand, if you have like boys and stuff, you got to really watch out. A lot of these guys, like Andrew's father said, they lost him to the internet when he was 14. And Onishchuk was by himself on the online. And all these guys are online communicating. I think they're vulnerable, almost like to be brought into a cult. And you could analogize Adam Waffen as a cult. And this is our stuff. We're special. We're underground. You know, come and join us. And
well, the far right, the far right in general has just been so great at propagandizing recently and creating this, you know, this attitude and identity. And, you know, we talk about all the time being edgelords, you know, really holding up antisocial behavior. Mm-hmm. And it seems like, you know, people would, maybe they would get started with joking around being racist on 4chan, and then like eventually just try to prove more and more this this attitude and identity they've adopted and end up into something like this.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because in some of the, I think the guy's name, Adam Waff, remember, was Moriash. He had this identity of a really intense far rightist, but then somebody investigated him and he had this like completely other real world identity. So it's almost like he had kind of like a dark alter ego, mm-hmm. but his real world was like, it gets stranger because some of these guys definitely have some homoeroticism things going on. Mm-hmm. Like you would think an Adam Waffen guy would only hang out with white people, but he had friends. He was a Mormon apparently. So there's a lot of interesting things that did not come in his real life that did not comport with his online identity.
Right.
Yeah. And I think, something profound happens to these younger men online. It's almost like they're being morphed into this other identity and they have to talk it out. And then they try to act it out in the real world.
Right. It's like role playing.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's what, I mean, you can kind of see, it's interesting because Woodward, for example, who's still in jail and has not been tried yet because of COVID for allegedly killing Blaise Bernstein, you can see his online kind of pattern of they reenact the scene of the curb stomp from American
History X.
History X, yes. Yeah. So you see pictures of these guys doing that. So there's pictures of these other Adam Waffen members reenacting this curb stomp, which is a fake movie, right? It's fiction, but they're bringing it into real life. So there's something happening very profound, I think, in this kind of subgroup that's really psychological. So it has to do with Asperger's or something, but also the morphing of a personality through the internet, how you become a separate kind of person, and then it comes to life in the real world. It's something really interesting.
Well, you know, the Blaise Bernstein murder, I mean, it seemed like that the killer of him really
the alleged tried. Killer. He hasn't been tried.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Gotcha. Like he really, apparently he lured him in and made him trust him. But there was an element of that that reminded me, you know, Surfiel brought up Lords of Chaos. You know, there is that incident where one of those kids killed, a homosexual man in the park, mm-hmm. In, what was it, Norway? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so there's this idolization of like Varg Verkins and
Right, like, burp dance.
Yeah, I'm curious about, like, do these guys, like, the kind of, like, the, just like the incel, I guess, online community, do they, are they, like, followers, or, like, do they idolize somebody like Elliot Rodger or, like, Adam Lanza, these type of people?
I didn't really see Lanza or Rodgers, but I did see a lot of references to Varg Bjørknes, who is the kind of I think Norwegian black metal guy who's a pagan who killed somebody. So you'll see people like Nutajim and Suvanaroth both knew of him in social media. So his influence was there. But I think that if you look at I mean, I don't want to get in. There's definitely some repressed homosexuality in these Ottomoffen guys. Not all of them, but some of them for sure. Because there's a lot of rumors about these guys, what they really are in real life. But, and that goes back to the Nazis too. They were not as straight as people might think. But sure.
Ernst Röhm, and the SA,
Hitler himself, man. I mean, these guys.
Well, see, that brings up a good point that I wanted to bring up when you're talking about James Mason, is that he idolized this guy, James Vaughn, Paul Joseph Franklin.
Right.
I may be getting a couple of these people mixed up, but...
No, that's the same guy. So he had fake name.
This guy was pretty much like, wasn't he like kind of a... He was like a transvestite, and he had a black girlfriend.
No, that was Spizak, but very similar. So he wrote about Spizak.
There's just like weird cross purposes going on here. It just, things just don't match up to what their ideology is supposed to be.
Right. No, very true. It's almost
bizarre.
It's almost like they're role playing in real life as real tough guys. Not that's the Nazi ethos, but there's a deep psychology there that the internal real life does not fit the external dressing or characteristics.
The cognitive dissonance is probably what triggers these events. And, you know, they're seeking to get to some kind of equilibrium or prove this assumed identity. And they have to do these extreme things in order to, you know, prove themselves.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that, that's something really deep psychologically is happening with these guys.
Yeah, when I read that about that guy, I just was like, what? Like, what is even going on here? You know, and that's the thing with all these kind of weird extremists, you see that kind of stuff again and again. It's like there's an outer life and there's an inner life, and there's the outer persona that they give to each other, and then there's this personal life that they have that is totally apart from anything that they're actually supposed to believe.
Oh, it's really true. It's really true. And but that external persona that they're putting out can be dangerous. That's the whole thing, is that it's real, but it's also a persona. So it's almost like a version of the tough guy persona, the Nazi persona. Yeah, no, there's some really interesting things. And you study these guys, like I've read through a lot of this stuff, and you just see this kind of Jekyll Hyde type thing going on.
It's really sad. I mean, it just showcases a lot of the failures of society, of counterculture and subculture and politics. The fact that just this like deep-seated nihilism that's actually acted out into, you know, murder and extremism and terrorism. It's like, what does the future have in store for the more alienating society gets to young people? I mean, are we going to just see more of this in new guises? You know, it's really terrifying.
I'm not optimistic. I really am not. Just in the way society is now, what people see on TV, breakdown of some of these cities and the riots, I don't think that that's a real positive, reaffirming type thing for young people. So I think that people really have to be careful. And I think that's another theme of my book, is like some of these people were really naive about the lethality of some of these people. And they ended up dead, like the parents of Giampa's girlfriend, dead. Like, that's why I call it, titled it, The Slaughter of Innocents. This kid, Blaise Bernstein, didn't know what he was dealing with. He ended up stabbed in a park. He had a ton of future, talented, smart guy. And maybe him. And there was an interesting, this guy Picciolini was, he was a Nazi and then he left, but he did a really interesting ProPublica investigation in Ottomoffen. And he talked about Himmelmann and Oeschlick. He said they just didn't have the time to become better men, you know? So they ended up dying in 2021. They could have changed and said, hey, man, this, it could have been anti-Nazis after being into it. You just don't know. And so their lives were cut short by some, I mean, somebody shot an AK-47 at him. And when he's talking to the parents, Picciolini is talking to Onishuk's parents, they just didn't have a clue. I mean, in my opinion, they didn't know what their son was into. Like, they brought out the Burzum shirt, which is tied to Varg Vergnes, and they just were like, what's that? I don't even, you know, if I saw my kid wearing that shirt, I'd be freaked out. But they didn't seem to know, they didn't seem to have an inkling of what their son was up to. And also, they were going, I mean, they Onishuk and Himmelman had been down to Tampa. They were killed on their second try there, or second trip there. And the parents didn't seem to know that they were going to visit with the head of Adamov. They told their parents like some story. Oh yeah, I got a job down there. So they believed it. That's what it seemed to me.
That seems to be a common theme in a lot of this stuff. I mean, you know, the Columbine killers, it was the same way. I mean, you know, the parents didn't know. They didn't know what was going on.
I mean, those kids were making bombs, you know?
Yeah.
They were making bombs. There were tons of guns. Like, they just didn't have a clue, man. Like, they should have. And there was didn't they do the killing on Hitler's birthday? Wasn't it April 20th?
April 20th, 1999, yeah.
So then you see that time with Silbanaroth, who's like, you know, had that Nazi aesthetic, talked about culling, all that stuff.
Yeah, well, let's talk about her. And there was also, James Gamble that was her, I guess, boyfriend or...
Yeah, and I think that goes back to that theme of online, the online persona becoming real life, right? She was online. She was on Iron March. And people really have good information about her on those Kiwi links or whatever it was, the message boards. But yeah, she had some relationship with James Gamble. She was planning to go from Chicago to travel to Halifax in Canada and do a, you know, massive slaughter a la Columbine with two guys, James Gamble and Randall Shepard. And they had just met, and she signaled a lot of the stuff. They selected Valentine's Day, February 14th, 2015. And it was interesting because she had this Nazi fetishization. She was, I think, half Thai or something. So she's Asian, and tons of online stuff and dark literature and things like that. And she traveled out. Somebody told about it, luckily, and she was arrested at the airport. But Gamble, once the police showed up at his house, he shot himself with a rifle and killed himself. But the judge in that case said, "Hey, you know, you were trying to do it. We have all this information. We have all your chat lines between you and Gamble and what you were planning." And she was also like a Varg Vergnes idolizer.
Right.
She wrote about him. In my opinion, few things are cuter than smiling Varg. But she had that whole thing, and she had the whole kind of culling mentality.
Yeah, and they had, and also we mentioned the Columbine killers. I mean, they had an obsession with them too. I mean, they literally thought that they're the souls of Eric and Dylan went into their bodies, and just weird, weird stuff.
Right. She like wrote something about him. I was to be his Eric Harris. He would be my Dylan Keybold.
Yeah.
You know, we must have known each other in a past life. Eventually I realized that we really were Eric and Dylan, their minds having refuge in our bodies sometime after their demise in 1997. What?
And the thing is that like they had, I mean, it was easy for the police, I guess. How did they found out? I guess because they found the text, or somebody had sent them that they were planning on doing this, or they monitoring the website.
Yeah, she had posted something on the website, Der Untergang, Valentine's Day, it's going down, under their personas, right? Yeah. So she was the kind of Adam Waffen skull mask persona, and he was the guy from Scream. And somebody, I think, either I got that or something else, some other information. And
that's the thing. I mean, you have the case where the guy kills the other two dudes and it just kind of blows it all open. So, you know, they're literally killing each other. And then in this second case, you know, that they make their plans pretty well known, and somebody blows the whistle on it and alerts the police so that they're able to stop it, thank God, before it happened. It just seems like these are not, I don't know, these are not the smartest, you know, tools in the tool shed.
No, they're not. Yeah, they're not. I mean, it's really, I mean, they, like I said, it's this actually a very common theme in this ideology. They kill each other or kill innocent people around them. I mean, it's they're often not killing their intended targets. I mean, if you look through my book, they're more often killing each other than their intended targets, right? But yeah, I mean, like I said, there's a lot of innocence. And I think that the despair in our society, I don't think it's getting better.
Not at all. So we should backtrack a little bit to talk about Ethan Meltzer and, you know, him being in the military. And this is kind of the, I mean, if this is kind of makes it more in the news, you know, a little bit, I mean, because this is where, you know, of course, I told you at the beginning, I mean, this is where I heard about it at first.
And that's just almost just 1 year ago that his indictment was unsealed. His name was Ethan Phelan Meltzer. He doesn't have a huge internet presence, so you can't quite go back through and kind of see his social media. But he was only 22, and he went by Etel Regad, which is dagger light backwards. He's from Louisville, Kentucky, and he was communicating secret information to somebody from the ONA, supposedly. And that's what his that's what his complaint says. And he's actually in the MCC in New York City with Ghislaine Maxwell. They're both in the same kind of being held in the same kind of jail. Oh, so
that's interesting. Okay.
But the one thing that was fascinating about him is there's pictures of him with this kind of skull mask, but also a copy of the Sinister Tradition from the Order of Nine Angles. So you see this very obvious, which I have on the cover of my book, the obvious ONA symbol. And that Sinister Tradition was a compilation of other earlier ONA books like Naos and Black Book of Satan, which they call Codex Seris now. But he was conspiring. He actually admitted it. They actually, he said he was a traitor against the United States. Mm. He said and this is like from the director in charge of the New York office. He said he turned his back on his country and his unit while aligning himself with members of the neo-Nazi group O9A.
Well, see, that brings to the question, how pervasive could this be in the military? Because, I mean, the military's got a lot of different groups that are vying for a lot of different, for all these men and young women. I mean, they're vying for attention, so... How pervasive do you think that this is?
I don't know. I was shocked to see how many. There's been other journalists, and I include kind of their. I didn't have permission to repost. I would have reposted some of their work, but there's other members out there, named members holding and having ONA books and things they're reading and all kinds of things like that. So of the totality or how deep it is, I think is a real concern. And if they're following kind of ONA doctrines of getting insight roles, that's why they're trying to get in the military to get training. So if they're really serious about their intent to kind of overthrow the government and start their own kind of civilization, I think that they need to really be concerned about it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, Meltzer himself had something called The Alchemy of Hate, which included a section titled Adolf Hitler as Dark God.
Well, it seems to me that it's only a matter of time before one of these people is going to pull something off. I mean, the guy in Britain in 97, I mean, he pulled it off. And it keeps getting stopped, but eventually, I mean, it's probably going to happen.
I'm not positive. I mean, look at Dylann Roof. Look at the guy who went into the... synagogue, you know, killed like 8 old geriatrics. So Dylann Roof, they call it the bull patrol in the right. So because Dylann Roof had a bull cut, and that's another example, almost another person I could have written about.
Yeah,
because he had that same thing, an online persona that he went crazy in the world, but his out external persona, he had African-American friends. There's recordings of people saying there's no way he did that. We used to hang out and smoke marijuana and blah blah, you know. It's like,
right. Yeah.
So what happened to him? How did he get radicalized? How did he? And it's probably all just online, some older person manipulating him with these ideology. Hey man, these people hate you.
Yeah.
So that's another example.
Yeah. I was really, really wondering about him because, like, you know, I know he could have just been online, but most, I saw him with like Rhodesian flag patches and all that kind of stuff. And it's like most, you know, young racist kids aren't really going to get that deep into like this kind of obscure history and, you know, who was taking all these photos of them. And it almost appeared to me like there might be some, maybe was some kind of handler.
I think there was some question where he got the guns to.
Yeah,
the weapons.
It was strange. Yeah.
I didn't know that. But there's actually interesting stories about the guy who, Bowers was the name of the guy who went into the synagogue, that there were these other brothers, these Clark brothers, who were also known neo-Nazis. And in the complaint, the Bowers complaint against him, they said that he was either in communication, I think, with one of the Clark brothers, and one of the Clark brothers went and killed himself the same day after Bowers did the assault. So I think the prosecutors hinted that they may have been communicating with each other online to carry out attacks together.
Yeah,
I think they intimated that.
There was the guy that you talked about in Georgia.
The Temple of Blood?
Yeah, well, there's Temple of Blood, and then there's the Austin Lane.
Yeah, that was the base.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah, that was pretty big in the news.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that. Yeah, yeah. And, of course, Temple of Blood, I mean, that's here in our part of the country.
Right. I mean, it's what's interesting, like one of the things that just researching this book is how these Nexions or how these groups, how much original literature they have, because the Temple of Blood had a lot of literature, and they have that, their own book is Iron Gates, which is like this post-apocalyptic book, but they're publishing stuff from some of these guys who are in the ONA in England, right? But they have their own books and doctrines and weird teaching, so-called fiction, and they flat out state in their manuals or in their one of their books, they say, we are a Nexian of the Order of Nine Angles. So you'd be happy that your kid was in chess club, drama, or anything better than reading some of this stuff. So, like, there's definitely, to me, like, where's the parental oversight? What's going on? But, I mean, I think it's hard for the parents if their kid is on the spectrum, too. That's another level of difficulty. So,
well, and you know, you could find, parents would be able to, like, find your books. But if it's all online, I mean, they probably just have no idea.
Yeah, they just don't know. No oversight on what their kid's doing. But yeah, I mean, it makes you think like, hey, maybe you should have a little more activity to see if your child is in this group or potential group of possible criminal actors, you probably want to have a higher standard of oversight than you might have. I mean, so because these guys are young and they're definitely susceptible, and this is, their lives are a disaster. Some of these guys are going to jail. Danders is probably going to jail for the rest of his life. And the other two guys are dead. So, but another theme in the book is like some of these guys have pretty short sentences too. So, I mean, the head of the Atom Waffen division is going to get out. I don't know if he's going to be repentant or not.
Yeah, the Temple of Blood. Let's talk a little bit about that.
I mean, like I said, it's a Nexian that's down, that's, you know, in the United States. They're influential. The guy who's been in the head of it is, people have said that he's an agent, but he definitely has a long pedigree of kind of far right politics. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Yeah, they have their own kind of, like I said, they have their own literature and things like that. His name is Joshua Caleb Sutter. But they were weird. I mean, it's really weird because they have like they're sympathetic to North Korean groups, but you can kind of see that same kind of ONA ideology where they're just growing, they're getting involved in my opinion, in these weird cult groups that further the Operation kind of Chaos mentality of the ONA.
Yeah, and they have an obsession with Kali, the goddess, the Hindu goddess as well. Yeah,
they want the age of, they want to bring forth the prophesied age of Kali and the era of darkness and disintegration.
Yeah,
and then you see like Genesis Peorge pops up with the OB. And you see the same stuff. You see them holding Bluebird. You know, just crazy stuff. These people are out there. I think that's one of the important elements of the book is you think like, oh, nobody would be an esoteric Nazi. Well, these people would.
Yeah.
Do you think that the authorities are being adequately educated about some of these subcultures?
No, I don't. I mean, they don't really mention it. It was interesting because in the time that I was writing this book, things have popped up. There's like an NTCT thing where they said the ONA is a very dangerous thing. So I need to add that to this book. So things have popped up. It seems like they're much more on the radar. And definitely there's groups in the UK who said the ONA should be banned or prescribed, what they call prescribed. But I think that they're going to start to realize the lethality of these doctrines and how dangerous they are. So I think that with maybe this book and other people talking about it, but like, for example, Australia, for the first time, banned a far-right group. They banned Sonic Creek. So they literally prescribed it. If you're a member of Sonic Creek in Australia, you go to jail for 10 years. And they've done, I think Sonic Creek is banned in the UK too. So the US really needs to have a really smart response and just stop saying like white supremacy and kind of bloviating about that loaded term, but talk about some of these other more dangerous groups with more specificity.
It's a little more subtle than just that, right? Yeah. So you, in the kind of like in the conclusion of the book, you talk about some questions that need to be answered. I mean, and you talk about kind of like we had you on to talk about last time, which is smiley face killers. And you kind of talked about a little bit that there might be some connection there.
Well, I mean, these guys are out at night. They're not like your standard Nazis who march around, and all of their kind of, I mean, you can talk like the culling doctrines and the culling texts. That section in the book has like the lurker of the night where they're driving to go see. And all these guys talk about going out at night, not all, but there's a significant number in the ONA who go out at night and are doing really dark stuff. So I was actually watching Chinatown just the other day, and I was like the first, it was a Polanski film out in 74. And they actually had like an SFK type. It was the first SFK death I'd ever seen, where somebody was drowned in one body of water and then moved to another body of water to make it look like an accident. It was incredible. It was one of the main characters, actually. Mulray was one of the main characters in Chinatown. But so somebody may be doing something like this at night. I mean, I think that there's a significant amount of water themes in ONA. And, you know, Igor Sarsky, who I include, you know, my interviews with him in the book, has his own opinions on that. But I think that people need to start asking more questions about what this group is really doing. I mean, if they're talking about sinister groups that are above the law, what are those sinister groups that are above the law? What are they doing at night? Because they're certainly not operating in day. And all of their stuff is about nighttime stuff. Noctulian, so they have the symbol.
Yeah, so this could be part of the culling kind of stuff, culling of the mundanes, that could be part of it.
Perhaps. I mean, I'm willing to ask that question. I asked that question. I don't have the answers. I don't have any evidence outside of what's in this book. But I do think that that's why I have that chapter, start asking the right questions, is I don't think anybody's asking that question.
Right.
Or nobody's asking the question about William Noctulius. Are you Noctulian? So the Noctulius is a bat that flies at night. There's a really incredible picture of Adam Waffen members holding the symbol, the ONA bat symbol. So it's like they're symbolically telling you, we operate at night, right? And it's not in my book, but I gotta probably put it in there. But what do these guys know? I mean, the authorities need to catch up, because I think that these guys think on a way that, and then you talk about motive for some of these nighttime crimes. The motive's right in my book and right in their documents. Culling. Are they engines of evolution? Are these the people that they don't like? And I mean, there's stories in the ONA literature about them having contempt for people at bars at night, you know, guffawing around in drunks and stuff like that. So they're that's on their radar, not mine.
Right. That's interesting. I mean, that's an interesting point, because I remember reading that in the material that you reproduce in the book.
Or at least something very similar, if not these particular groups.
Something simple. Yeah. I mean, that was this book is my introduction to really underground literature, and I'm sure there's more. They state in their own documents, the ONA has literature the public hasn't seen, and they have an oral tradition where they exchange information through words. So I don't know what they're fully up to. I know what they've written, but I don't know what they're why do they have smiley faces on two of their internet informational websites? I don't know. You know, so there's symbolic ties, and I mean, Molt was friends with another guy who's friends with all these occultists. He was friends with a guy by the name of David Tibet. He uses smiley faces all the time in his art. He was friends with Genesis P. Ord. So you see this occult underground that they're talking to each other. And I think that's the worthwhile part of reading the Stephen Brown letters, is that it just shows that these guys know each, they know each other. They're communicating pre-internet. It's really fascinating.
I'm curious, William, have you seen Sons of Sam?
Yes, I have.
I was curious what you thought about it, because some of the elements of it, especially with these guys kind of killing each other, seemed very,
or themselves,
very
or supposedly suicided.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed very similar to the way that this is structured. And then the fact that, John Carr is found dead on an Air Force base, and then I can't help but think of Ethan Meltzer and, you know, the possibility of some of these groups being in the military.
Yeah, no, you make a good point. I mean, I think how are these cults different? I mean, how are they operating the same? They have larger groups than you might think. I think that's what the Sons of Sam shows, and that's what Maury Terry showed. And I've done an interview with this guy, Manny Grossman, who's going after some of this stuff, and shows that that cult probably goes back very far, decades before it surfaced in 76 and 77. But yeah, I've done a couple shows about Sons of Sam and some of the stuff, but you just see how evil and lethal these people are. Like, I think that in this kind of cult, like, they decided at some point they were going to start killing people in public. And I think that that's what the Sons of, or the Son of Sam killings were. And, yeah, and Berkowitz took the heat for it, took the blame for it.
Yeah. And then it seems like they started to kill each other.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that they wrote that there were 20 deaths. I think they, Maury Terry wrote there were 20 suspicious deaths, not just the two Carr brothers, but all these other people started turning up dead after the Son of Sam killings in 77.
You know, I was kind of familiar with Maury Terry's work. I mean, do you think that he was on to something, or do you think that he kind of...
I think so. I think that he was trying to tell the truth as he saw it. I think he was local. Yeah. And I think that he was right. I think there was a lot more to the story. I think that the police were very fortunate to just have a nice bow, tie it up, and say Berkowitz did it. But all these other people said that somebody else was involved or somebody else shot him. DeNaro just wrote a book about saying that I was shot by somebody other than the Son of Sam. I was shot by somebody other than thing. And he's actually walking around with Manny Grossman. I recommend you take a look at Manny Grossman's work, because it's very interesting, because DeNaro is just flat out saying, yeah, it wasn't Berkowitz. And Berkowitz admitted to two of the deaths, I think. And then probably it was the Carr brothers, and there was a woman involved. So there's a much broader group. But I think Maury Terry was on to something pre-internet. And we used to actually have that confirmed, because I used to be on the Facebook page of The Ultimate Evil. I was on there with Opperman, and I think McGowan was on. I'm almost positive this is before he died. Oh, yeah. So I found out that he was posting on there under the name Trudy Leak. And I always saw those names, but I didn't know it was Maury Terry. But he was still kind of researching all the way up to the end. And I think that he was on to something. I think that there was a lot of occultism going on in New York City at that time. A lot of dark stuff, a very dark era, pedophilia and human trafficking and blood drinking.
What do you think about the, I'm picking your brain here a little bit, but the Roy Radin angle? And I kind of look at the Roy Radin angle stuff, and I can't help but think of that could have been a basis for, like, Eyes Wide Shut, you know?
Yeah, something like that. But I think that that's an important part of it. I'm pretty sure. Was that in Ultimate Evil? Is that story about Meltzer? There was this guy who was supposed to be Manson II, who did one of the shootings in New York City and then shot Radin. They were both. Yeah, I think one guy was a neo-Nazi.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's in that or that's in another work.
Right. It's tied into the Cotton Club story, right?
Right.
So,
right.
But Radin was there, and I think that there was just a network. There was all kinds of weird stories. The story of the couple who had their blood drained. You hear about that story. That was associated with that whole New York scene. And that was clearly a cult. And then throwing some Mapplethorpe into the occult. And then the Sisman killings.
You talk about Mapplethorpe?
Mapplethorpe, yeah.
Yeah.
And then Sisman Killings, I think that Berkowitz talked about Sisman being connected. And Berkowitz was the one who led Ori Terry to the Arliss Perry in Stanford, right? So these are just things that they're that come out of like Berkowitz knew more than he was telling and still knew more than he was.
Which, you know, I mean, Maury Terry was right about who killed. He was right about
right, you're right, because that's how it finished out Sons of Sam, right?
Right.
At least that guy was involved. There may have been other people involved. They just came to that guy's thing. I mean, yeah. Yeah, I actually wrote an article about the Arliss Perry death before that guy got found. It's tied because it happened on Curly Moss, October 12th.
That's right. It did, didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So you can look at my article. It's the death of Arliss Perry, Curly Moss. I forgot the full title. I'll put it. Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, you can read that. I wrote that in 2015 because I grew up in Palo Alto, so I knew that area. I knew the whole story. I actually knew the priest who officiated at that. It's a non-denominational Stanford memorial.
Right. That was at Stanford. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, it's really bold because it's really at the very center of the campus. That's what that quad area was really the core of the Stanford campus. So,
well,
it's really in your face.
According to that documentary, Arliss Perry herself had spoken about talking to people in some kind of cult.
Right. So the rumor was that she was in Mino and she was a Christian and tried to convert somebody, and they didn't like it.
Yeah.
So she was targeted.
What was going on in Mino, North Dakota, of all places?
Right. Just the strangest place, like a military base.
It's the Air Force base.
Right. But what's a woman doing at a church at that? I don't even remember the year, but in like close to midnight. That whole story just doesn't make sense. Yeah. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I don't know if you're familiar with Walter Bosley's stuff.
Sounds familiar. What did he write?
Empire of the Will.
No, I don't know that.
He's local to you, so. But you know, he talks about the, San Bernardino. Yeah, San Bernardino. Yeah, he talks about the San Bernardino and the like 1915 and like a series of what he believes are like ritualistic murders. You should look up Bosley. He's an interesting guy. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot more of it than people want to really ever say. You know, they just kind of poo-poo it. But I think that some of these crimes are, I mean, you can put an anthology of satanic crimes. I mean, actually, like, yeah, I mean, you can see like how these guys, I talked to Sarsky and he said one of the things that's similar to the SF gay crimes is the death of Kilroy in Matamoros, because they were looking for a sacrificial victim coming out of a bar, right? So all these SFK kind of deaths are the same thing. There are people late at night disappear.
Is that the stuff that McGowan wrote about?
I don't know. I don't know if he did, but it was, I don't know if he covered it. Was it Jesus Adolfo Constanza? He was a Paolo Malombe practitioner.
Yeah, it gets really weird.
It's dark and weird. Yeah.
I thought I would ask you about that.
Well, this is a dark and weird book because you would not think this stuff I didn't think any of this stuff existed. I didn't think there was such a thing as esoteric Hitlerism. So, but you know, it's attractive to a certain subgroup, and people I think need to know about it because it's not a subgroup of people, you know, doing basket weaving or art or, you know, something like that. They're all nasty. Death-obsessed people.
I mean, and really when it comes down to it, I think a lot of them are just thugs, and they're just using it as... They're using all this kind of stuff as a means to justify that.
Yeah, it almost seems like a lot of the ideological stuff is more secondary.
Right.
Interesting, yeah. I mean, you could say that as the Nazis. I mean, some people just got into it for, what they really... Yeah. They didn't care about the ideology. They're thugs.
That's true. I think at that point, William, I want to thank you for coming on. This has been a really great discussion about this. As always, I always enjoy talking to you. Tell people where they can find the book, where they can find your website, and I guess you still have the Smiley Face Killer film up, correct?
Yeah, it's on. I put it on to Amazon, so it's on Amazon. My original one. My other ones are on Vimeo. I got to put them back up. I just kind of got to do a couple things. The Kindle version is now, a Kindle and hardback versions of this book are on Amazon. And then you can buy a signed copy from my website, WilliamRamseyInvestigates.com. You get signed copies of all my books at my website, William Ramsey Investigates. And then I have a podcast that I've been working on. I kind of got kicked off the YouTube. So if you want to kind of see a variety of different interviews, some about this book, some about other subjects, Sons of Sam, you can go to William Ramsey Investigates on iTunes.
Okay. Excellent. All right. Well, thank you, William. Thank you so much for coming on. Stay on the line for us. We're going to close out this section. And guys, we will be right back to close out the show and also plug the Strange Realities Conference on Conspiranormal. Okay, we're back. And that was a really good interview with William Ramsey talking about the Order of the Nine Angles and the Atomwaffen Division, or whatever it's called now.
It's pretty sad, really.
Edgelords.
The only fortunate thing is that really, like, these elements of the most extreme fringes of the right, the fact that there's really no path to power.
Yeah.
And that the only thing they have to do is seek out young, very, you know, hurt, impressionable people to try to do terrible things to create chaos. And just the big tragedy is that, you know, just the lack of imagination of a future, or what kind of future people want, that may be a better world for them, you know, instead of that, it's just this, like, nihilistic despair.
Yeah, totally agreed.
You know, it's weird. We definitely have different, like, cultural frames of reference. You know, when we had him on talk about the smiley face killers, there was definitely stuff that, correlations that I didn't really think were, had too much to them, like with the psychic TV and stuff. But however, in the context of this, I mean, the stuff I've been reading recently, it really does seem like Genesis Peorage never really fully answered for how much they promoted this kind of fascistic imagery, and of course, friends with Boyd Rice and all those guys,
right?
Too, so,
right, yeah, they could say that it was art in the sense of
right
way, yeah.
But then when you see, right, you know, James Mason on Bob Larson's show, yeah, with Michael, right, Moynihan and Boyd Rice hanging out with him, you know, it's
they're
like,
in the background, yeah.
How much of this is art, and how much of this is like?
Because apparently Mason believes it, you know, he believes it. So,
and Mason probably felt like he was using their art to,
right,
spread his ideas.
Right, exactly.
Not them just wrapping their art in extremist fascist aesthetics because they're attracted to the aesthetics.
Yes, yes.
You know, it's weird. I mean, I've had a lot of eye-opening experiences studying a lot of this stuff, because really, like, I was very influenced by the, you know, the apocalypse culture. And how much of that really was, you know, a lot of that does line up with the strategy of the extreme right at this time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting what's going on. What's, you know, it's kind of nebulous in a way, it seems, yeah, like.
But this stuff is, you know, just, it's showing, like, you know, these ideas that were, like, incubated in the 80s really come into full swing, and people actually, you know, acting out this ideology.
Right. Yeah. Well, and they have no context for any of this stuff that, like,
yeah,
went
these
before.
Kids could,
yeah,
give,
yeah,
a shit about.
Right.
Boyd Rice.
Right. Right. Well, yeah, very interesting. And we talked a little bit about the Sons of Sam documentary, which, if you guys haven't seen that, that's a definite good suggestion. We actually did a Patreon about that not too long ago, which you guys can check out on that feed. The usual, we are gearing up for Strange Realities Conference 2021. And the website is been updated with the speakers for this year, and will be updated soon with some motel and hotel information for you guys to place for to stay with a hopefully a good discounted rate. So we are working on that. Strange Realities Conference is October 15th through 17th of this year. There are going to be 21 speakers. Not all of them are going to be there at the venue at SIR, but we will have at least half of them there. And so if you guys want to come out and hang out with us here in Nashville on that time, please. That is $70 to do that. And it is $30 if you want to join us online, which we'll be broadcasting the entire conference online. So whether or not the speaker is there at SIR or at their home, you guys will be able to check that out. So, also mentioned before, our Patreon. Sergio can tell you where to find that.
You can find that at patreon.com/conspiranormal and join one of our three-tiered secret orders. We are going to be recording a episode this week about...
I'm going to... actually, that was for this week. Yeah. We're behind this week. But we're going to do something about the haunting in Connecticut and the Warrens. You guys may have heard that already. So,
yeah, kind of some weird revisiting of that. And so every week you get a new episode on there. Every month we have our $10 and up Mystic Crew Hangout, where you get to see exclusive presentations. And at the $20 level, you get an exclusive T-shirt and experience at the Strange Realities Conference.
That's right. And you can find all that information on our Patreon, and also go to strangerealitiesconference.com if you want to find out about the conference and all the wonderful speakers that will be speaking there. All right, guys, that's it. Join us next time. Explore some... Robert Guffey is going to be hanging out with us. We're going to talk about Bela Lugosi being dead or something on Conspiranormal.
Consider becoming a Patreon at www.patreon.com/conspiranormal or leave a one-time donation at conspiranormal.com. And please check out our YouTube channel, Conspiranormal Podcast.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.